Well, here's a question for you. Why is Egypt building a large open-air prison right on the border with Gaza? Well, we now know it's, of course, to hold hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, but there's something shocking about this prison, even though it's on Egyptian soil. It's controlled by Israel. How does this work exactly? We'll get into that part of the story in a second. But first, the United States continues to carry out bombing attacks, multiple attacks inside Yemen, hitting Houthi targets. This is, of course, a war that the United States Congress has not authorized. Overnight, Houthis attacked the underground internet cables linking the Persian Gulf to Africa. It could take at least 8 weeks to repair it, according to sources today. So what exactly do they want? Well, they want the United States and the UK, of course, to stop funding and supporting the destruction of Gaza. One of the best journalists in the world is a woman by the name of Vanessa Bealey. She was recently at the border area in Gaza near the Rafah border crossing with Egypt, and she joins us today from Damascus, Syria. Nice to see you, Vanessa. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Clayton. Thanks for having me back on. It wasn't that recently, by the way. I was in Gaza in 2012, 2013.
Oh, okay.
Not recently,
okay.
Although I wanted to try and go, but I think it's pretty impossible at the moment.
Right, but you're going to be able to speak to us about that border crossing and what you were seeing then before, of course, what is happening now there. But you cover this very, very deeply, and your reporting on this is some of the best in the world. So we'll get into that. I want to get your take first on, though, something that happened over the weekend in the United States in Washington, D.C. on Sunday. And how the U.S. media responded to this, I thought it was very telling. So a U.S. airman, U.S. Air Force officer, stood out in front of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., doused himself in an accelerant and then lit himself on fire. And he was yelling, "Free Palestine." And at the point before he lit himself on fire, he said, "I cannot be a party to this genocide. I will not be a party to it as a U.S. Air Force officer." The mainstream media in the United States, though, seem to omit the part or any mention of Palestine, any mention of the Palestinians, just said that the guy, you know, was crazy and committed suicide. And I couldn't help but thinking the parallels to when we saw during the Vietnam War protests and other individuals in the United States standing in front of the White House, lighting themselves on fire in protest of the war in Vietnam. And the mainstream media at the time covered it. They showed the images on the nightly newscasts of these individuals setting themselves on fire, but no mention of it in United States media. Did that surprise you?
No, not at all. And I think what was even more shocking was you could hear voices and the threat to actually shoot the guy even while he was on fire. Like, those voices were pretty close by, and not one of them tried to do anything about a man being on fire in front of them. I found that even more shocking, to be honest. You know, did they hear what he said? Did they know why he was there? I mean, it seems unlikely they didn't.
They drew the weapons on him, of course, and said, get on the ground, get on the ground. So you're pointing a live firearm at a guy that's on fire. But the mainstream media response to it, of course, omitted anything about Palestinians.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I just found that absolutely shocking.
Well, I mean, not really, because, you know, they've been describing the pro-Palestine solidarity movements and protests across the world as far right, as Islamist extremist, as, you know, they've done absolutely everything in their power, not only in the US, but in the UK, they've been labeled as far right extremists, racist, Islamist. I mean, the attempt to crack down on any dissident reaction to their country being involved in and complicit in what is a clear genocide of the Palestinian people has been extraordinary. And the kind of the spin that's been put on these protests, on anyone that is speaking out against their country being involved in genocide, it's shocking.
You're starting to see a change, perhaps. You're starting to see a number of countries now moving to put sanctions against Israel. You're seeing, of course, the courts now saying enough is enough, that they have no legal right to this land. We'll see what that actually means. But I want to talk about Egypt and specifically the day-to-day attacks that we're seeing by the people that have now been forced down to the southern part of Gaza. For our audience that doesn't understand this, I mean, these people were told to go south, where they would be presumably safe, right? Get out of the north. We're dropping leaflets. We're going after Hamas terrorists. That was the message. If you are remain here, you will be labeled a terrorist, so you better move south where, you know, you'll be safe. That hasn't happened, has it?
Well, no. And I mean, you know, the extraordinary thing now, the Zionist regime is talking about a ground incursion into Rafah. And people also need to understand that while officially the operation against Rafah hasn't started, they've been bombing heavily, massacring entire families for days now, if not actually the last 2 weeks, because I have a friend that I can get in contact with on a fairly regular basis who's been pushed from the north of Gaza and is now in Rafah itself with his sick parents. And they've been bombing areas of Rafah for, I think, around 10 days now, heavily committing massacres inside Rafah already, even before the ground incursion. And the fact is that the Israelis are saying, well, okay, but if we push ahead with the operation in Rafah against Hamas, then the people will evacuate the people. But where to? You know, they've completely destroyed all infrastructure in the center of Gaza and the north of Gaza. In Gaza, in the north, you now have 700,000 people that are effectively under famine conditions. In central Gaza, there are some humanitarian aid trucks getting in, but when the civilians try to go and get food supplies, they're being fired on by Israeli tanks and snipers. And dozens are getting killed in this process alone. So where is the safe place for the people in Rafah to go to, except to try and get out through the border into Egyptian territory? Because there's nowhere else that is safe within Gaza itself right now.
So let's talk about this Egyptian question here. So at the border, a border you've been to, and heavily armed border with Rafah, on Rafah there, the Rafah, of course, is a city bisected by the border itself. So it's split between Egypt and in Gaza. These individuals are these Palestinians there are waiting at the border wall. They're there being slaughtered as we speak. But on the other side, there's a massive open air walled prison, I guess is the only way to really describe it, being constructed over the past few months, few years. The area has been bulldozed and cleared out, and walls are going up. This is under Israeli control, as I understand it. So what do you think is about to happen here? Are we about to see hundreds of thousands of Palestinians forced through this border into this open-air prison?
Well, I mean, it certainly looks like that. The first images and footage of the construction of this area, which appears to be a completely walled-in area, similar, of course, to Gaza itself, but on a smaller scale, that came from, what was it, the Sinai Foundation for Human Rights that published these images. I think it was then CNN that actually provided substantiation for these claims by showing a satellite image of the works that are being carried out by Egypt on the Egyptian side of the Rafah border. But for people to understand the border itself, so the border that you arrive at to get to Gaza on the Egyptian side is quite a big complex, huge gates, which they very rarely open. Rafah crossing is actually closed more often than it's open, even prior to the present genocidal campaign by Israel. You then enter the border complex. You have to go through a series of checks and so on your papers, on your visa, on your permission to enter, etc. As a foreigner, I'm talking about. And then you actually have to take a bus from the Egyptian side across to the Palestinian side, where you have another kind of reception complex area, where you again go through other checks, but on the Hamas side.
So there's quite
but
a buffer zone
buffer
there.
There's quite a big buffer zone already.
Months ago here on the show, we showed images of aid trucks on the Egyptian side, which were parked there along, you know, this, it was seemed like a PR campaign, but this, it was all these aid trucks lined up along this long buffer zone. So it's not just a wall and you're on the other side, like in the United States. It's there's quite a neutral zone there. So I just wanted to be clear about how you're describing it. You have to take a bus from one side.
Yeah, but the reason you have to take the bus is because that buffer zone is under the control of the Israeli forces. So if, for example, I tried to walk that buffer zone, I would be shot.
I see.
So it's only the buses that are, you know, legitimate that can pass that buffer zone, because you have security watchtowers, Israeli security watchtowers, all along the wall of that buffer zone. So even if Palestinians, for example, as they did actually in 2012 and 2014, when they were under heavy attack, they tried to escape through the buffer zone, and they were shot at both by Israeli forces and by Egyptian forces at that time to push them back into Rafah. And if you go back to September 2005 and the Philadelphia Accord, which the Israelis see very much as an extension of the 1979 Camp David agreement that was brokered by Menachem Begin, President Sadat of Egypt, and Jimmy Carter of the United States. Actually, the Israelis effectively have control of that buffer zone itself, right? And they perceive that as their territory. So presumably, although the open air prison that is being allegedly being built, I do have to say Egypt has denied the reports, but in my view, that doesn't mean a huge amount. And we'll come on to the reasons behind why Egypt might be prepared to accept so-called refugees from inside Gaza into Egyptian territory, provided, of course, they're enclosed in a secure area in another open-air prison, which in my view would then be under the control of the Zionists, because although it's not actually in the area that was agreed to be under Israeli control, it's connected to that area. So that's a moot point, you know, who is actually going to have control over that area? I would suggest it would be the Israelis. And all of Saudi Arabia's claims that if, Egypt's claims that if Israel goes ahead with the Rafah operation, they're going to end the Philadelphia Agreement, which effectively will have the knock-on effect of breaking the Camp David Agreement, which of course will bring all the penalties on Egypt's head from Israel. So in my view, I think this is just rhetoric. And there's another reason, there's a very strong financial reason why Egypt might well allow this to happen, because it's under pressure from Saudi Arabia and UAE. Egypt has a debt of around 160 billion to Gulf state countries. 20% of that debt is owed to Saudi Arabia and UAE. Now, Saudi Arabia, UAE have a huge economic trade interest in normalizing relations with Israel. UAE was the first to do it in 2022. Saudi Arabia, again, is making noises about a Palestinian state before it normalizes. But in the meantime, it's investing. I mean, you confirm that to me. It's investing huge billions of dollars into construction of, almost a continuation of its five-minute Neom city, which is going to be constructed in northwest Saudi Arabia, 60 kilometers away from Eilat in southern right. occupied territories, right?
Right.
So there's a lot of pressure on Egypt from Saudi Arabia and UAE. One, because of the investment in the Sinai. And if you imagine they want to build a kind of a Dubai in the Sinai, they're not going to want a tented Palestinian city in view, very much as the Zionists, when they're building their settlements and when they're building, that's why they put the wall. They don't want to see the Palestinian enclaves.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I can confirm. Yes, there's massive billions of dollars going into a new marina in the Sinai. There's also a brand new PGA golf course that's going on where they hope to have PGA tour events. You're not going to want to see a tented city of Palestinians begging for food nearby. So this is going to be a problem for all of this money flowing into this area, of course. earlier you mentioned, well, Benjamin Netanyahu over the weekend spoke to CBS Face the Nation and said that this operation is about to get started and it would last weeks, not months, he said. And they're going to go after four battalions of Hamas that they've identified in Rafah. They've taken out 18 of them, he said. You're going to have to go after four of them in Rafah. Earlier, when you were talking about Hamas, you did air quotes that Israel is going after Hamas in Rafah. Can you clarify that? And what did you make of Netanyahu's comments over the weekend?
Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of insane. I mean, we know that Israel is using effectively an AI genocide factory to delineate targets inside the Gaza enclave. And that means that actually the rate of kill is much higher than in previous wars that relied on human identification of human targets. Now you have an AI system that is effectively producing maybe 10 times the number of targets per day. Now, if that's the case, the huge majority of the 30,000 plus that have been massacred by Israel are civilians. 50% of that are children. We know this. So they're not targeting Hamas. They've never targeted Hamas. I mean, I was in Gaza in 2012 under a much lesser Zionist aggression, but nevertheless, it was horrifying. And the areas they were targeting, even back then, was essential infrastructure, hospitals, schools, families. If you see it in the kind of the prism of genocide, what they're doing is they're killing entire families, because they don't only target one house with one family and extended family members in it. They will go after another house in another area of Gaza with the same family and extended family members. So they effectively target an entire family, right? And the claims that they've wiped out Hamas battalions, why then are Hamas fighters still engaging in the north and firing rockets from the north, which in theory was completely cleared, and the IOF has actually evacuated the north to focus on the front with Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. And even in the center that is supposed to be under the control of Israeli forces, they're still coming under heavy attack from Hamas. The thing is, you know, you can't wipe out Hamas, because Hamas isn't only Hamas. It consists of all of the resistance factions inside Gaza. I think there were 17 at the last count. And those include socialist, the PFLP, they include Christian, they include atheist factions. It's not even only Islamist. It's an ideology. Resistance is in the DNA of Palestinians, because they have endured more than 100 years of ethnic cleansing, rape, murder, torture, oppression. So you can't wipe out Hamas, and Israel knows this. So this sort of, when I say Hamas, this is just a pretext for them to continue the genocide.
So then their only answer is to have that area completely removed of Palestinians, completely removed, moved into this open air prison of the individuals that are left. And then the reconstruction can begin. And as we covered here last night on the show, and as you've been covering, this amount, the amount of money in 2021, Egypt has signed a reconstruction contract of Gaza with. So they are getting they have a monopoly on the reconstruction of Gaza, and they signed this contract back in 2021. I mean, they knew it was coming. So Egypt sort of plays this game like, we're the good guys here. We're the good guys here. But they're going to make a lot of money off of this reconstruction, are they not?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, who's behind a lot of this construction is a guy called Ibrahim al-Arjani, who is incredibly close not only to Egyptian intelligence services, Egyptian military. He's effectively a Sinai warlord, a very powerful one, with direct connections to President Sisi. He has, I think it's a BMW franchise in partnership with the son of President Sisi. And he basically, his company or his group, the Organi group, had the reconstruction contract, and he effectively has control of the Rafah border on the Egyptian side. He's charging, what is it, 5,000 per adult, Palestinian adult, and 2,500 per child, even if that child is injured and desperately needs hospital care or hospital admittance, for them to go from Gaza into Egypt. And he's benefited, of course, from the tunnel trade, the trade of goods from Egypt into Gaza through the thousands of tunnels that I myself went through to enter Gaza in 2012. And, you know, Egypt stands to profit, as you said, in the reconstruction of Gaza. But for who? We know that Israeli real estate companies are already putting out advertisements for real estates and condominiums on the coast in Gaza. And we also can't ignore the fact that there is, I can't remember how many cubic liters of gas off the coast of Palestine, not only off the coast of Palestine, but Syria, Lebanon, and Egypt for sure wants to be involved in the exploration for this gas. You know, so there's a lot of advantages. And for Egypt, since 2007, they have effectively been reinforcing the blockade on Palestinians. Numerous presidents, even including Mohamed Morsi, who was in power for 1 year before he was basically deposed by President Sisi, was flooding the tunnels with sewage water. I was there when that was happening, both pre-Morsi and after. So Egypt has been instrumental under the pretext of security, which of course is exactly the same reason that Israel used to build the apartheid wall illegally in the occupied territories, right? And for the same reason, Egypt has blockaded Palestinians from the Egyptian side.
Unbelievable. Well, we'll be continuing to watch this. I know Vanessa, you can follow Vanessa's Substack. We'll link it up in the description below. One of the finest journalists in the world covering this story. So we really thank you for everything you've been exposing here and covering. Thank you so much, Vanessa.
Oh, thank you so much, Clayton.
I really hope you enjoyed watching this video. You know, YouTube thinks that you'll actually like this next video right here. It's personalized based on your own viewing habits. So if you watch the video, please leave a comment. Let us know what you think about it. And we will see you next time, everyone.